This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kanizan and Noel Lim. 7:35 a.m. Tuesday, the 4th of May. And later on, in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill, and it's going to be a really interesting one today. Noel, why don't you tell us what's happening?
As the contest in the DAP's national and state elections heat up, many are wondering what is the future of the party, and will DAP return to federal power or remain in the opposition? So Wong Xiaoning will be speaking to former Transport Minister and National Organising Secretary of DAP, and possibly one day the party's next head honcho, Anthony Lok. I think they will be discussing about the party, the state of politics in Malaysia, and his hopes for the future.
Spicy stuff, I'm sure. So be sure to tune in for that later on. After the 8 o'clock news bulletin, going to be an interesting one to listen to. But right now we are turning our attention to what has been happening in India. So against the backdrop of a dramatic rise in COVID-19 cases, politics continues. Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his BJP party have been defeated in state elections in West Bengal, Tamil Nadu and Kerala. So the defeat in West Bengal is particularly significant given the aggressive campaigning by the BJP in the run-up to the polls. Now, mass rallies and the state elections have been blamed for the spike in COVID cases. India became the first country to register over 400,000 new cases in a single day on Sunday.
Definitely not the kind of records you want to be breaking. Meanwhile, hospitals in India continue to face an acute oxygen shortage, with several cases of patients dying when oxygen supplies ran out. The Delhi High Court has now declared it will start punishing officials if life-saving supplies don't make it to hospitals. On top of that, you've got morgues and crematoriums that are similarly overwhelmed, and the daily death toll has now breached 3,600 deaths this week. Only the US and Brazil have registered higher deaths of 4,000 per day.
Now, what does this all bode for Prime Minister Modi's political future? For some analysis on the situation in India, we're speaking this morning with Dr. Pradeep Taneja, lecturer of Asian Studies at the University of Melbourne. Pradeep, thank you so much for joining us today. Why do you think Prime Minister Modi's party failed West Bengal despite the massive efforts seen there to court voters?
You're absolutely right. Prime Minister Modi and his senior ministers in his government spent a lot of time campaigning in West Bengal. They devoted a lot of resources to campaigning in West Bengal, but they still failed. And that's partly because West Bengal is very different from northern India, where Prime Minister Modi's BJP party does the best. You have to understand the context of West Bengal. West Bengal was ruled by the Communist Party, this CPIM, the Communist Party of India Marxist, for 30 years. Before the current chief minister, Mamata Banerjee, came to power about 10 years ago. So West Bengal has a very different history. The simple messaging of, you know, polarization, Hindu-Muslim divide, for example, that works in other parts of particularly northern India, doesn't work quite well in places like West Bengal. West Bengal is the home of several Nobel Prize-winning, you know, laureates from Rabindranath Tagore to Amartya Sen, the economist. Mother Teresa spent most of her life in West Bengal. So West Bengal is a very different territory. I think people are much more enlightened in the sense that they are much more aware of issues. They have probably a higher level of, I think, analytical skills in the sense, you know, in separating political messages from the truth.
Yeah, so when we last spoke to you, you pointed out that Modi has a Teflon reputation. Bad news did not taint him or stick on him too far. But do these state elections indicate that he could be losing broader national support?
Well, state elections are usually fought on local issues of development and local issues of identity, I think. And national issues, of course, are, you know, fought on different issues. So to that extent, I think election results, these in five states, should not really be strongly indicative of what might happen in 3 years' time at the national election for the Lok Sabha, for the India's federal parliament. But still, I think the really bad handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly the second wave, what's happening in India at the moment, that is, I think, going to do much more damage to the BJP's, you know, electoral chances in 3 years than anything that happened in the state elections.
And Pradeep, when we talk about this current situation on the ground right now, what policy options is the Modi government looking at to rein in the pandemic? I think their lockdowns have been brought up, but I think they don't look likely at this juncture. What are your thoughts here?
Well, from what we are hearing from government sort of press releases, etc., the government say that it's working very hard behind the scenes, that, for example, they have organized special trains carrying oxygen from, you know, parts of the country where there is greater capacity to produce medical oxygen. So they are trying to ramp up in the supply of oxygen to hospitals across India. But really, the problem at the moment is not what the government is doing at the moment, but the problem really is that the government did not prepare the country for the second wave, you know, or perhaps even a third wave later on. And so government should have, you know, really focused its effort on shoring up capacity to deal with the second wave. We know from the experience of other countries in Europe and in the United States where there has always been, you know, second or third wave. And this is quite common in pandemics like this. But instead of that, Prime Minister Modi and his government were declaring victory. They were saying that they have defeated COVID. They were celebrating. The party was actually congratulating Prime Minister Modi for his wonderful handling of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic. So instead of preparing the country for the second wave, they neglected to do that. And that's why I think the public is very angry. There is a great deal of anger in India at the moment against the government.
Now, if we take a look at the international response as well, Pradeep, what do you make of the responses we've heard from other countries towards the COVID crisis in India, particularly from the US and China?
Well, Indian government, as you may know, Indian government had over a decade ago, even before Prime Minister Modi came to power, had decided not to accept, you know, aid from other countries. And that was an indication of India's rising status, the fact that Indian economy was the world's fastest growing economy for a time. And therefore, there was this attitude, even in the previous, the UPA Manmohan Singh government, that India did not need to take help. In the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, India, in fact, was quite active in providing aid to the countries like Indonesia that were affected by the tsunami. But this time, the Indian government, and I think quite rightly so, has decided to accept aid and assistance from other countries. United States government has, lifted the restrictions on exports of, ingredients or materials that go into the manufacturing of vaccines, a restriction which was imposed by President Trump, but President Biden had not immediately lifted it. But following the crisis and meetings within the U.S. government, President Biden decided to lift those restrictions, and that's been welcomed in India. And also Germany and other countries have provided, you know, assistance to India. As far as China is concerned, I think most of the materials which are arriving from China, plane loads of material, then they're not part of aid. These are goods that Indian hospitals, Indian government and private companies have ordered. So China is supplying those. They're not really aid from China.
On a similar note here, India is also facing an acute, because of the acute vaccine shortage domestically, we've seen them freezing of vaccines exports. This was back in March. Will this create friction with countries that are relying on India's exports?
Well, I think obviously some countries, particularly countries which do not have their domestic capacity to produce vaccine, which is the majority of countries, in fact, they would not be very pleased with these restrictions because there were 60 plus countries that India had already supplied more than 60 million doses of vaccines, and they may not be getting a second dose, and that is going to be a problem for these countries. So I think there would be some disappointment in these countries, but at the same time, I think most governments would recognize that at the moment India is facing the worst crisis. So the decision to put restrictions on exports of vaccines out of India, it has to be seen within that context.
So assuming India will eventually get out of this pandemic, this crisis, and by 2024, how would you rate Modi's chances of being re-elected?
Well, in politics, 3 years is a long time. You know, as they say in politics, 1 week is a long time. So it's difficult to say how this pandemic might impact the 2024 elections. But certainly, as I said earlier, there is a great deal of anger against the government. In cities like Delhi, for example, which has been very badly hit by the second wave of COVID-19. So I think this is likely to flow on, and particularly whose families have been, you know, really terribly affected by the second wave, where, you know, members of families have died or people who've suffered. So remember, there are millions of people who are being infected by COVID-19 in India. Being infected by COVID-19 itself is a traumatic experience. And a lot of people are actually blaming the government for not doing enough to prevent the second wave or to be prepared for the second wave. So I think there is going to be a lingering sort of concern, but ultimately the 2024 election outcome will really depend on, first of all, how long this pandemic continues, and secondly, I think, how India's economy fares after the pandemic. So India's economy, if it comes back to high-speed economic growth, if Indian economy starts growing at 9% or something like that, then I think people might you know, be more charitable towards the Prime Minister.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Pradeep. That was Dr. Pradeep Taneja, Lecturer of Asian Studies at the University of Melbourne, giving Narendra Modi still a possible chance of re-election in 3 years' time, because as he pointed out, 3 years is a very long time indeed for politics. I guess it will really depend on when the COVID-19 crisis dies down in India. It doesn't look like it's going to do so anytime soon, tragically.
But I also wonder how much scarring there's going to be, right, in the political arena, because, you know, when he came in the last time around, there was a lot of fanfare. The BJP came in with a sweeping majority for the first time in ages. Now, is the BJP going to be tainted by this, by Modi's effect on them, but not just from the political arena, but this health crisis? Will it be, instead of a fight for re-election, but a fight for survival the next time around in his term? Because as Pradeep mentioned, there are lots of people who have suffered directly from this. How is the economic scarring going to pave the way in the political arena going forward?
Something that we will be watching very closely. But right now, about to head into some messages. And up next, how do we best address the problems with affordable housing? We're asking Hamdan Abdul-Majid, Managing Director of Think City. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.